Clarifying court orders when disputes arise with attorney Adam Halleck. That is our topic for today. Welcome to the Lawyers and Mediators International Show and Podcast, where we discuss law and conflict resolution topics to educate both professionals and everyday people. Catch regular episodes on YouTube and anywhere you get your podcasts. Just remember, nothing in these episodes constitutes legal advice, so be sure to talk to a lawyer, as cases are fact-dependent. Hey everyone, this is Mac Pierlui, attorney, mediator, arbitrator, working throughout Florida and Texas. And today, I have a special guest, and that is Adam M. Halleck. And Adam, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Mac. Thanks.
Yes, yes, sir. And so let me introduce you a little bit to the audience. So Adam and I were both colleagues, attorneys, been working together for years. Well, not together, together. We've worked alongside each other. We've actually worked against each other in the past. And so I invited Adam, after seeing you in court recently, invited you to come onto the podcast to talk a little bit about a topic that happens all the time in family law, in civil cases, generally speaking, but happens a lot in family law cases. And that's the issue of court clarifications of court orders. So Adam, can you tell a little bit about yourself to folks who might not know you?
Well, I am a bar licensed attorney in Texas. I work exclusively in Texas, licensed in 2001. I came from a background in the sciences, biology, and chemistry. I was a professor, and I have a PhD and a master's degree in both biomedicine and biology. And I was going to be a patent attorney, and became very, very interested in family and criminal law. And that's where I am today. Been doing this for about 20 years now, 20 plus years, and really enjoying it. And of course, Mac, a lot of respect for Mac. Known him for a long time, and we're great friends. And we like to talk about the issues that arise when we are, handling our clients' business, which is real important to us.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, man. Yes, I've known you since my days at the AG's office years ago. I remember you sometimes would have questions whenever it came to certain, issues involving the Attorney General's office. But I'm glad I could have been of service at that time. And then fast forward all of these years, we still have issues come up. And so it's always good to have somebody to bounce back ideas off of. But one thing I wanted to, mention, Adam, is, as I told you I was going to say, a lot of people sometimes think that just because lawyers are friends, that somehow means they cannot work against each other if a case was to come up. But you and I have actually been opposing counsels on at least one matter, where we had to fight for our clients. And did that work out? I mean, or was there any problems because of that, because of our friendship?
No, not at all. And and I think some people are also put off by the fact that there is a collegiality between us attorneys because we know each other well. And they think that because of that, we can't really zealously advocate for them because the other guy on this other side is our friend, and which is really so far from the truth. I mean, as you brought up the case that we had against each other, it was a child support matter. Your client was the father, my client was the mother. And, we went after it. We both zealously represented our clients, and the judge made a determination based on our presentation of the evidence as we understood it and as applied to the law. So we walked out that day, even though we had maybe been a little bit cross, we think, with each other during the hearing. We walked out afterward and said, hey, good job, man, and I'll see you on the next one. Yeah. So that does not mean that we're not looking out for our clients. You're never going to give me a heads up or some type of way of, an advantage because we're friends, and I'm never going to do that for you because that just is completely against the rules of ethics and professionalism in Texas. So if you do this long enough, like you and I have done it, you're going to get to know everybody, all the judges and all the attorneys that work in our jurisdictions. There's no way around it. So, we work against each other and we're still friends. And that's the way it should be.
Yes. And well said. And the issue also is the judges, all the judges, they used to be lawyers, right? And so we know them as well. We still do our job for them. We respect the bench and we treat them, and respect their position. And we put aside, for a certain moment, any kind of relationship we might have, with them. But yeah, the rules of ethics covers all of this. And I just wanted to make sure I brought that up just because you and I may see each other on opposite sides again, you know, one day when we try to help out our clients. So looking forward to it. All right. Yeah. Before we go into the topic of clarification of court orders, I wanted to share my screen and remind you of something that you and I had worked on some time ago. And during COVID, Adam was gracious enough to come on and do a mock Zoom court hearing back in May 2020. And the reason for this was I had this idea of contacting a judge down in the valley in South Texas and asking her, a real judge, and asking her, hey, do you mind helping us educate the public by showing them how Zoom court works? And so she was gracious enough to say yes. And so I got a few other people together. I invited you, and you play the role of a fake father involved in a child support dispute. And that was a lot of fun. We had to do a couple of takes on that one because, you know, those were the days of Zoom and COVID. Everyone, you know, was kind of locked at home, but the court system still had to work and proceed. And so this video was a lot of fun to create. Took a good hour to two, you know, from what I recall. But it's gotten 27,000 views, you know, since May 2020, and which, you know, speaks volumes, because I think there was a lot of interest on this topic, and especially by the public who had never done Zoom court before, and they wanted to kind of see, how does this work? And then so I appreciate you so much for dedicating your time and volunteering your free time to helping make that video a reality. And I appreciate that judge as well, and some of the other individuals, you know, like Shelley Simon, who represented the mom's attorney. Again, all this was fake. All this was a mock trial, but it really went to show what was possible. So do you have any thoughts on this? And people can check it out, by the way, on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and just type in Texas Zoom court mock hearing, and it's going to come up. It's on the LMI podcast channel. But do you have any thoughts on this?
I thought it was great. I'm surprised we haven't done anything, you know, sooner. It's been 4 years ago. It was, quite a different time in our history than with COVID and everything that had changed concerning court appearances and everything. And so it was really informational for the people who viewed the podcast, but also for us folks who are in the middle of trying to figure out how to use this new type of system, Zoom appearances, to advocate for our clients. And I really enjoyed it, and I learned some things from it. And even though we don't do as much of the Zoom appearances in court anymore, we still do utilize that. It's here to stay. So, and I think another important thing about it is too, people who viewed this saw that, you know, and as we were discussing the Zoom hearing mock situation that we set up, the presentation was really, I think, beneficial for people who'd never been in court before, and also those who'd never used or been involved in a Zoom appearance in court. So it gave them a little bit of extra comfort that this type of proceeding would work. It would be efficient. They'd get an opportunity to present their case through their attorney or on their own. And so it took away a little bit of the fear of, gosh, what's this all about? And also the setup, the technical part of where, you know, you click in through Zoom, you connect, you put in the password, boom, you're there. Okay. And so I think this was real beneficial for people, because this was going to be the way it was going to go for the next year or two. And so I think it was great.
Yeah. Again, thank you so much for your help on that. Okay, moving on to the topic of the day. So in the Texas Family Code, and again, I'm licensed in Florida, but today we're going to focus specifically on Texas law. And of course, there's a corollary that's similar to this issue in the state of Florida as well. But we're not talking about that today. The issue is this. In the Texas Family Code, subchapter I of chapter 157, there is a section called clarification of orders. And let me just read briefly what it says. Clarifying non-specific order. A court may clarify an order rendered by the court in a proceeding under this title if the court finds on the motion of a party or on the court's own motion that the order is not specific enough to be enforced by contempt. So this specific section that I was just reading comes out of the Texas Family Code area dealing with enforcement of child support. But you could ask to clarify any parts of the order, not necessarily involving child support enforcement, but also possession and access. But the point is that the law provides a way for a court to come back and clarify non-specific terms of a court order, especially when those terms are ambiguous, vague, and different people come to different conclusions once they read those sections of a court order. So these issues of clarification come up all the time. But Adam, let me give you the floor and talk to us a little bit about when do you typically see the issue of order needing to be clarified come up, and what have you done about it?
Well, one of the most obvious and the one that happens the most is where there's some issue with the drafting in the final order concerning when child support is to be paid, how it's to be paid, how long it's to be paid, and if there's any step-down provisions because there's more than one child. Not too long ago, an individual came to me with an issue where there was language that had been left out of his order, in which the straight reading of the order, the four corners of the document, implied or actually said that, and he had three children, after his first child reached the age of 18, he no longer had to pay child support anymore. Now, he had continued to pay child support for a year after that, and then somehow realized, and I'm not sure how, that the language in his order said otherwise. So he stopped paying. Well, then the attorney general filed a motion to clarify or a motion to enforce or both, and this was going to be taken up in court. And he was asking me, you know, what can I do about this? You know, what can happen? And I said, well, you know, I need to go talk to my buddy Mac, because he's the one I go to with these questions. You know? And I do that all the time, is call Mac or somebody else that I know, because even though these things happen fairly often, there's very few times that a party wants to pay the retainer and go and try to clarify, because they kind of feel like it's a dead end for them. Okay. So in this case, I don't know how that's going to pan out, because it was just recently brought to my attention. In other cases that I've had, essentially, the problem is that if you don't take action, the order is going to stand as it is. And if you've already paid money in based on your understanding of what you thought your job was to do under that order, you're probably not going to get any of that money back. So it is a problem. It is something that we have to, you know, work with our clients very closely on and make sure that we find out all the facts on when they probably should have jumped in and filed, you know, a suit to clarify or to enforce. Yeah. And so
let me ask you, what would have been the solution to avoid this problem from the first place?
Well, take action as soon as you realize that there's something wrong with this order. Something didn't sound right about this order. And, you know, this is with the backdrop of most of our clients don't ever get a copy of the order. They don't really know what's in the order. They don't really read the order. They just ask us what they're supposed to do. We tell them what they're supposed to do. We obviously tell them every time, you need to get a copy of the order, you need to read it, and then you need to underline it, highlight it, and get back with me on questions, okay, before you sign it. Of course, most folks, they just sign it thinking, hey, my attorney's covered the whole thing and, you know, everything's good, which is generally, I'd say 98% of the time is the case. So it's an interesting situation that comes up way more often than people think.
Yeah, I think a lot of times if attorneys who draft these orders, and it's usually an attorney, right? It's not a pro se person without a lawyer. The attorney who drafts the initial order or the final judgment that people are now disputing whether it should be clarified or not, if they simply took the time and thought out all the negative unintended consequences of how people might interpret certain language in the court order, if they simply thought it out and tried to write the cleanest order possible, you wouldn't have a lot of these problems, right? And I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah, and most lawyers don't want to be bothered years later by an old client coming back to them saying, hey, look, you messed up. You wrote my order wrong, or that's not what I intended, or we're having me and the other parent, or we're having a dispute over what we meant. That right. question, and nobody wants to go to a judge and say, judge, you clarify, you tell us what we meant. I mean, that should be right. you, the parents, right? So,
right.
But what's the fix then? So let's say the person realizes, okay, my order is kind of screwed up. It needs to be clarified because I think it means one thing. The other parent thinks it means something else, or the AG wants to enforce against me. And then they come to you. What then happens next?
Well, we have to file a motion to clarify, or we have to respond to the motion with the clarification request. That has been filed by the Attorney General or the opposing party, and then set for hearing and move forward and ask the judge to make a decision on it for us.
Yeah.
Now, of course, prior to that, we got to gather evidence. We got to gather the evidence of, when did this happen? What were the circumstances around it? How? And I think the critical question is going to be, when did you realize that you had a problem here? Somebody who waits, a decade or 3 years or 10 years, to take action and then go, well, wait a minute, I've overpaid by $100,000. Well, you should have taken action way back when you first saw that this was potentially an ambiguous part in your order, or you had a different understanding on it than what the opposing party did. And, folks don't do that. And so when that happens, it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard to do anything for them at that point.
Yeah. You said a second ago that there may need to be evidence that is brought to the court's attention to help the judge make a determination on what's best. So this is, I think, a reason why people need to get lawyers. A lot of people watching this, they might think to themselves, okay, I'm just going to go and do this myself because, I heard the lawyer reading chapter 157 and therefore I now know what to do. But here's the thing. I always tell clients this. The reason you need a lawyer is because you didn't go to law school and learned the rules of procedure and the rules of evidence. That's what burns people all the time who are not lawyers. They think they know just by Googling stuff, but you're never going to be a master enough on those two sets of rules. Trust me, I know, because even as a lawyer, I still have to go back and look at them all the time. Mm-hmm. And judges do as well. And so we always need to, beef up on those rules. And I just don't think any non-attorney is going to have the wherewithal to know and be aware of how best to protect themselves without understanding the rules of evidence and the rules of procedure. So just one.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I you and I both run across this all the time. I was talking to a party on another case the other day. It was a grandmother and it was an adoption termination case. And I don't want to get, but the thing here was people come to the courthouse with their own understanding of what the law is procedurally, for evidence, case law, everything. They have this idea that the law is the way they think it is and it should be. And so those folks, you're right, they get rolled up and kicked out of the courtroom right away because they are living in an unrealistic world of the law. The funny thing about it is the courts in Harris County and in Texas, they follow the law of Texas and not the law of Grandma Jones. and this is and there's rules for putting on evidence and everything. You're right. And one of the things that's really difficult is counseling those people to understand why those rules exist and why we have to. You need an attorney to guide you through the pathway to getting a determination that's under the law, follows the law, and applies the facts in your favor. That's you know, that's the biggest part of our job. And so you're absolutely right. The evidence and then the understanding of how the evidence has to be presented and what's going to be admissible and what's not going to be admissible. And these things are issues that we have to deal with every day.
Yep. So, Adam, let's start closing up. What are a couple of takeaways for this whole issue of order clarifications? And I would ask you, what do you think are the most common reasons why, when this comes up, where people need to have orders clarify? We both talked about child support earlier, right? Like failing to put down a step up or step down, or not step up, a step down language in a court order when kids start emancipating. But what other common reasons might people find themselves needing to have a court order clarified?
Well, number one, you got to get an attorney. It is, you know, I don't go treat myself for my, you know, my my cancer or whatever I have on my own. I go see a doctor. I get someone to help me with that. Yeah. The same thing is going to be for your legal issues. You got to get an attorney. What are some other things? Well, some other things that could be clarified or that are screwed up in an order that are not put in plain language that everybody understands is pick up and drop off times for possession and access.
Big one.
Where, when, how, you know, how payments are to be made. It's going to be the, for child support, first of the month, middle of the month, you know, how is medical support going to be handled? And how do you, how are you going to submit out of pocket reimburse, you know, receipts for reimbursement? Do you need to send it by in the mail? Do you do it through Our Family Wizard? Do you do it through Gmail, email? What do? You just go over and stuff it into the mailbox of the other party, you know, the receipt and the, do how detailed does the reimbursement request need to be? All these things should be spelled out in plain language in the order. And a lot of times they're just not. Other things are, you know, potentially, you know, property issues. Where a particular type of property is supposed to be signed over by at a particular time. And I see the most common mistake is the property is allocated to one individual with no deadline for that property to be turned over or yeah. or a deed or title to be executed. Yeah. These are common mistakes that occur and that, you know, you need an attorney so you can get those things clarified so that you can actually yeah. get the action on the order that you need.
Yeah, the issue of property division comes up a lot with refinancing. You know, when, by when do you have to refi? If the order simply says, you know, the party X shall refinance the home, but they never do it. And then 5 years right. goes by, right? You're going to have a lot of potential legal ramifications from that because of enforceability and the time constraints and all of that. So,
absolutely.
Just so many issues that come up from this one little topic of clarification of court orders. And yes. if people could only do it right the first time, you would not find yourself in court having to clean up an order. What a waste of time and money, right? However, if you don't handle it and if you don't get an attorney and address what the order should indeed say, you could have even bigger headaches, potential liability, yeah. enforcement claims against you. So it's one of those necessary evils that might have, you know, to be done. All right. Well, Adam, thank you so much, man, for this chat on clarification of court orders when disputes arise. Hopefully you will not need to address it, but if you do, then, you know, you can contact Adam or me or another attorney. So Adam, if people want to get a hold of you, what's the best way they can reach out to you?
There's my email right there, amhellick@gmail.com. And let me say thank you, Mac, for including me, and you're welcome for taking my time on this Saturday because I always like to talk about these issues with you, and I wish that we had more time to just sit and chat, you know, about these issues because they are important, they're informational, and they keep us moving forward, and they make us better attorneys.
Absolutely. Well, you're always welcome. All right, guys, until next time, if you want to watch more of these kind of videos related to family law, civil actions, you know, legal actions, mediation, conflict resolution, be sure to check out lmipodcast.com where all these videos are housed through the YouTube channel and on Spotify. Okay, everybody, take care. Until next time.